Previously on Quantum Kickflip.
Gold Star Disaster. You have successfully neutralized the Dreadfly, and you have just learned a little bit about the imminent doom of Operablum by way of an alternate helix that was affectionately given the moniker Ruined Helix.
I can't believe that the Triskelion base is going to be the thing that sinks it. I thought that was finally going to be the first chance for the towers to work together.
We have to tell them, right? We have to get the word out that this is what's going on. And if enough people know about it, then they can't go ahead, right?
I have talked to Ginevra and put in a request for to move you into the control group.
You don't know what that means. I don't think I know what that means.
It's gonna come out. I didn't have a say in it, and I just... Look, it's bad, but I'm sorry.
What do you mean something's gonna come out? What, you're sorry for what?
Maeveline Zandros putting the disaster... in Gold Star Disaster.
Maeve is left there, the video ends, and she's just furious.
You brought me back! Thank you, friend, thank you! And Karsinogen, his little crab form, jumps up off the table, wraps his claws around Walt's neck.
Trev, I've purchased you. You're a free robot.
Stanch sort of leads you through the level of 211 up to a very small freight elevator, and he opens up the doors, and there's a little banner that just says, "Welcome home, Trev."
I have a question, Stanch.
Ask away.
How high can I take this elevator?
Meanwhile, encrypted messages from Gold Star Disaster are sent to social media accounts, texted to private phone numbers, and written down and tucked away in hiding spots. Operablum is in danger. We need your help. Meet at Trinity Municipark. Tell no one. Everybody, and welcome back to Quantum Kickflip, a Slug Blaster actual play podcast. My name is Lena, I am your host and your Slugmaster, and with me are some of my best and funniest friends in the whole world who are going to introduce themselves to you now. Players, as you introduce yourselves, I want to know, tell me about a weird or impressive connection you have.
Hello, my name is David Ray, and I play Trev 4, the Heart Playbook, and my weird connection... So when I was like 4 or 5, my dad was a Zamboni operator for the Brandon Wheat Kings, and I didn't have skates or anything like that, but my after one of the games, they had like one of these skate arounds with all the hockey players and like other kids and stuff. And I was just like standing off to the side, just like, well, I kind of want to be out there, but I can't. And my dad went to one of the players and like, hey, can you just take my kid around the ice or whatever? And he puts me up on his shoulders. He skates around a couple of times, and he became my favorite hockey player, Kevin Cheveldayoff. And I would go to every game, and I was like, heard that he was going to go to the NHL. And so I'd like always be looking for where he is on the ice. And I was there when I saw his career-ending injury, where he like hurt his knee and he couldn't play anymore. And that was really sad. And then the Winnipeg Jets left, and then I'm like, I don't care about hockey anymore. There's no reason. And then when the Jets came back in 2012, I was so excited. I'm like, okay, maybe I can start caring again. And the general manager of the team is Kevin Cheveldayoff. So my team that I was going to care about again is, and he still had his career, and he, you know, he coached for several years and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Dang.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Liam. I play Helix Pinnacle, the smarts playbook with a hard light board. And I have an uncle who's a diplomat. He was at one point Canada's ambassador to Kazakhstan. When Borat came out, too.
Oh, big deal.
And then was...
Huge portfolio to deal with.
The other weird thing that I had heard, I can't remember if he told me or I like ended up reading about it in an article when that movie Chernobyl came out, or that series Chernobyl came out. But Chernobyl happened, the Russian government obviously not big on sharing information with their... civilians. Mm-hmm. It was my uncle was a very young diplomat, and one of his first jobs was to fly to Kyiv and tell a bunch of Canadian students who were studying in Kyiv, like, hey, you guys gotta leave. They're not telling anyone why, but like, you guys are super close to nuclear fallout.
Oh shit.
Canada, you guys gotta, you gotta, you need to fly there, get like 7 students studying abroad and bring them back to Canada.
Crazy.
My name is Michael Vetch, and I'm here playing Wolton Wick, the chill playbook with the robot companion. And I don't have one that's like a, ooh, fame, celebrity connection. Ooh, it's more of those like a, ain't the world so small? Ain't that weird? Mm-hmm. There were some people who came to see me in an improv show this past summer, and they were just like on a whim. They're like, oh, mom loves to see theater stuff. Let's just invite her along. And then they came and they had a great time. And then they came up to me after the show and was like, oh, by the way, this is our mom. I guess she grew up being like best friends with your aunt. And it was just like, yeah, I had no idea you were in the show. My daughters just said, come along. And I was like, wait, Vetch, I know that. Wow, I friend. Wow. Yeah. And it was just like, wow, how do, what's more crazy? So it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Robin. I play Maybelline Zandros, the grit playbook with the photonic jacket. And it feels weird because like, I do comedy and do music, and so, like, I've, like, been at festivals with people, but then that doesn't feel like a connection. It's just like, yeah, I got booked at a thing. Mm. But I'll do one time Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall was doing sketch comedy at a festival that I was doing sketch comedy at, and he needed a guitar for his act and didn't have one. I don't know why. It feels like... Yeah. He should either have one or, like, the festival should provide that for Kevin McDonald of Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
But a producer came to me and was like, hey, can Kevin McDonald borrow your guitar to do his set? And I was like, of course, absolutely he can. So I have, like, a very blurry picture on my cell phone of Kevin McDonald, very small, because I...
Yeah. He's a tiny guy.
He's a very small guy. Yeah.
He was covered up by the guitar.
Yeah. But he played my guitar, and it was cool.
And I have done improv with Mark Meer, the voice of Commander Shepard from Mass Effect, which may feel impressive, but also I am an improviser in Edmonton. So, of course, I've done improv with Mark Meer, the voice of Commander Shepard from Mass Effect, but I'll call it that. I'll call that a win.
You can't walk down the street in Edmonton without doing improv with Mark Meer.
It does happen at you and against your will, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. That's right.
Walking along, minding your business, and all of a sudden he comes out from around a corner and he's like, whoa, that's a lot of potatoes you have there. And you're like, what? I guess I do.
Yes, they're russet potatoes, your favorite, for our anniversary. Speaking of connections, we are about to make a whole bunch of new connections in a clandestine meeting of the minds. What does that mean? Let's find out. Let's play some Slug Blaster.
Oh, yes.
Let's do it.
On the 700th floors, between the three towers of Kindred Multiversal, Lansden Enterprise, and Web Corporation, construction of Triskelion Base has begun. Supported from underneath by incomplete arches and from above by steel cables, the base builds out from the towers towards the center, gradually shifting from concrete platforms to scaffold skeletons. In between the scaffolding is a staggering, yawning expanse of open air. 502 floors below, a different three-way skyway is starting to see more activity. The doors to Zenith 98 Hub slide open, and three sets of footsteps walk in sync towards the center of the skyway. Another set follows shortly thereafter, wearing boots that are far more worn down and less fashionable. The heavy doors of Lansden are pushed open, and a lone figure quickly darts through, moving with a deficiency of confidence. Momentarily, the park is bathed in a soft pink light as the portal zone from Prismadia opens up, and three figures step through, followed by two more, not long after. For a few minutes, the people in attendance here look awkwardly at each other, unsure of what to do next. The tension is broken when their mutual connections arrive. As Wolton and Trev 4 emerge from Zenith 98 Hub, Helix enters from the courtyard of the former Webb University, and Maeveline comes through the doors from the empty warehouse of Lansden Tower. Gold Star Disaster. The air, though still breathable, is more sour than it's been in the past, a grim reminder that the fog is creeping ever higher. You know that Triskelion Base poses a danger. But in coming up with a plan, one truth soon became apparent. This was too much for you to do alone. And so, you reached out to some accomplices. Would you mind telling me who you've enlisted? Let's start with Maeve.
Maeve isn't entirely sure who she can trust in this moment, but she knows we need all the help we can get. Normally, this is the kind of thing that, you know, she's made a lot of progress with the Arborists, and she would want them to be aware of this situation. Their resources could make or break this, but something about that cryptic note that Brinley left behind, don't trust Shimmer, don't trust the Arborists. She doesn't believe that the Arborists could be up to anything nefarious here, but she believes in her friend and she trusts her friend, and she can't quite bring herself to go to Forrester Tarment or even Forrester Carmina about this particular thing, just in case there's something nagging at her. But there is one Arborist that she knows that she can trust through thick and thin, and that is Sharla, her Arborist dorm mate. So she has asked Sharla to be here.
Oh, geez, it's really smelly down here.
I will say Sharla looks pretty apprehensive. It's clear that she has taken the no one goes below floor two rule, like, to heart.
Yeah.
She is so intensely aware of the law she is breaking right now.
It probably smells so bad because we're breaking the rules.
That's the stench of anarchy.
I think as much as she, you know, she can trust Sharla to the ends of the multiverse, she knows that Sharla is not a slug blaster, and they may need some capable crew here. So she has also put out word to her old former crew, Mad Method, Mondo, Decembria, and Hanser. She has also reached out to a newer crew that they've come across more recently, who she's recently been in a bit of a bad spot with. I think she reached out directly to K-Jump of BRB. Things weren't left in the best place there. BRB, or at least their management, took out some kind of an attack ad and exposed Maeve's criminal past and the whole reason that she's in the Arborist in the first place, and kind of like, just, yeah, it was an anti-Maeve attack ad. And Maeve is feeling pretty betrayed about that and pretty angry at K-Jump for not intervening in some way. But I think she knows that this is bigger than all of us, so has reached out to K-Jump and essentially been like, you want to prove that you're sorry for that? You want to atone for that, you be here. And whether that's all of BRB or just K-Jump or somewhere in between, we have yet to find out.
Mad Method, all of them made it here. You actually had to reach out to all of them separately to make sure they all came. And you can kind of tell they're like still sort of standing close to the thin zone that they broke through, and like they look kind of awkward. They look a little like not like a tight-knit crew, which kind of gives you the vibe that maybe they haven't been rolling together very much since the Waking Pits. But they have all come together for you. K-Jump is here. She's not looking at you.
That's like, I'm not looking at her.
Yeah. She's also not the only member of BRB that is here. One other has elected to come with her, and standing with an open shirt and a doofy smile on his face is Tybalt.
That's our boy.
Trevor.
Trev has invited Stanch to come and help. He thinks Stanch has some, you know, he might be able to help us with traversing the towers, so.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I think he's also kind of standing off to the side. Like, you know when you throw a party and you invite a friend that you really like, but who doesn't know anybody else at the party, and so they kind of just stand awkwardly in the corner?
There's an awful lot of children here.
There's a lot of children for
Yeah, he is definitely the oldest person here.
Have any of us met Stanch?
No. Helix knows of Stanch, but the two of them have not met.
Yeah. I like the idea that there's just... I found this weird guy.
Yeah. We all brought like fellow slug blasters and other crews that we know. And they're like, oh, our robot brought his middle-aged friend that none of us have met before. maybe Trev has mentioned Stanch before, and all of us are like, oh, that's Trev's imaginary friend. Trev made up a guy that rents him sometimes.
It must be another robot or something, you know. What kind of name is Stanch?
Again, Helix has never met him, but he knows who this person is, and is like, Trev brought his grieving friend. His nice, sick, good.
Oh. Walton.
I think Walt put the call out to his cousins, the Wicks, just knowing that family has always got his back. And like, though he and their crew and his position within said crew has caused some tumultuous times between them, they've come out the other side and they'll always have each other's backs.
Yeah, absolutely. Your cousins are here for you 100%. I think of all the other people in attendance, they are the ones who are most comfortable being here in Trinity Municipal Park. They know about the portal zone from Prismadia. They don't make a habit of hanging out down here, but also they're like, yeah, we're slug blasters, whatever. We can hang out down here. But they're not the only ones that came from Kindred Tower.
Yeah, I think while Walt put the call out to them, Carcinogen managed to reach out and talk to Viperkin about this whole shindig. Thus Viperkin then, you know, through the telephone, through the grapevine, Brably's gonna be here.
Brably is here as well. Viperkin is currently stashed away in his Dibo vice, and he has the energy of a 10-year-old in an abandoned building that has a big no trespassing sign. Like, he is just like looking around wide-eyed, like kind of grinning and like almost shaking with excitement at how dangerous he's being right now. And Helix.
Helix wasn't able to rally any support in person. Definitely not the rest of the Pinnacle Project. He'd love it if Sequence could be here, but Sequence hasn't been their self lately. And generally the Pinnacle Project is a bunch of nerds under strict supervision. Mm. So not really who you want for a clandestine operation. he does know a slug blasting crew famously under no supervision and famously not nerds. And has put out a call to the crew of stunts. And while they weren't able to attend in person, he is expecting a call from them and sort of has the stunts guys in his back pocket.
Excellent. All right, Gold Star Disaster, your team has assembled. Now it is time to make a plan.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming to the meeting. This is very important that we work together, and we need all of your help.
Yeah, we recently got some pretty upsetting information about, well, Opera Ablum and Triskelion base and the whole thing that's going on right now. Helix can maybe speak to it better because it was a different Helix that gave us the information. It's a long story, but Helix, you want to explain what other Helix told us?
Yes, I met a version of myself from 5 minutes in the future and was informed that the Triskelion base, if erected on top of the three towers, will create enough downward force and weight on the base of these three towers, what would essentially become the legs, and in pushing the weight of the towers down, the ground on which all of Opera Ablum is built is actually quite malleable and soft, and not only would it physically lower the position of each floor by way of being weighed down into the pit it creates at the bottom, but that pit also creates a pool for more toxic fog to enter, thus rising it exponentially up. Which, all of this to say, if Triskelion base goes on as planned, the towers will be sunk into a pit of toxic fog well beyond what we've experienced in our lifetimes, more or less engulfing every level below, let's say, safety's sake, 700 and, you know, round down. completely covering the towers in toxic fog to the detriment of everyone not on Triskelion base.
Oh my garb, the fog hasn't been getting higher, the towers have been getting lower.
It's worth it's both.
Whoa.
The lower the towers get, the easier it is for the fog to rise.
Oh, so if they finish up this Triskelion whatever, it's going to be real vulgar for all your dimension then, yeah? So is that why you brought us in? We're going to try and like rough this thing up, you know? Is that what it is? Is this a little demo crew? Because Hans is on that. You know Hans. You know how he is.
I mean, I like where your head's at, and maybe it'll come to that. But right now, we're just feeling like, I mean, this base has been a long time coming. This is not even the first time they've tried to get this project off the ground. It has the combined weight of all three towers behind it, as well as, you know, several factions outside of that. And we're not sure that we can stop this from happening, even with the crew we've assembled here. But we need to get the word out. We need everyone to know what this is going to do before they finish building it. And hopefully, if the entire dimension knows, then they won't be able to do whatever they're trying to do. We actually don't know who knows what here. We've been working with, you know, Shimmer for a while now. She turns to Madman and is like, Twinkle.
Right.
Just sure, everyone's hands are nodding. They're totally nodding, yeah.
And, you know, we're sponsored by Wilkie's, but it's not clear who's doing what for what reasons. Shimmer definitely wants this thing built, but whether they're, you know, overtly evil and trying to destroy the dimension, or maybe just opportunistic and they're thinking more about their profits and their bottom line and don't realize, you know, maybe they are misguided and don't understand the impact of what they're doing, or maybe they genuinely think that they're bringing the towers together and saving Operablum and they don't know, but we can't just give them the benefit of the doubt here. We need to assume that we can't trust them. And likewise with Wilkie's, I mean, they've been working with Shimmer, set up the whole deal with Lansden Tower. They're definitely, you know, bedfellows to some degree. So I don't think we can trust any of the larger factions here. It's going to have to be a bit of a grassroots thing.
Wolt, I don't think you mentioned anything about working with Shimmer. You guys have been, how long have you been working with them?
A little hard to say. At this point, we're not even certain what of our actions was for them or not.
They kind of just told us that they wanted us to keep bringing the towers together and doing stuff that would help the towers come together.
And in our defense, that seemed like a noble endeavor, even if it was a criminal organization. We do want the towers to come together, make no mistake, but
yeah.
This particular plan will doom us all and leave the door open for opportunistic forces to capitalize on the chaos.
It felt like they were sort of stepping in behind a path that we were already taking, but maybe it turns out that they were the ones who laid that path out before us anyway.
Yeah, Walt's right. It's really hard to tell how long we've actually been working for them and what we've done that has been for them or against them. It felt like for a while there, just like everyone we met, you know, a few days later, they'd turn around and be like, I've been Shimmer all along. It was like an ongoing problem that like every new person we met, like, oh, they're also with Shimmer. It's a whole thing.
Whitney like looks like she's thinking, and then she kind of shrugs and throws out a rock on sign.
But none of this is going to matter if we just get the word out to everyone in the dimension and perhaps sway the hearts and minds of everyday Operablins that this cannot go forward, or at least deserves a sober second thought.
It seems to me that the easiest way to communicate is the same way that the towers communicate to their employees. Perhaps if we get control of the billboards that are located throughout the whole tower, there is a control station in each of the towers that control it for that particular tower. If we can access it and upload a video, perhaps we would be able to get this message out effectively to everyone all at once.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. And everyone kind of looks up, because this is an open-air skyway.
Mm-hmm.
These don't exist anymore. And everyone kind of looks up at sort of the triangle that forms around you that's like aglow with advertisements that are constantly shifting and changing.
Was that Brably that said?
Yeah, it was Brably.
How does the rest of the crew feel about this child being here?
Glad to see Bradley's here. We need all the help we can get.
Smart call, Walt. Good call inviting him.
Well, I didn't think that I did, but he can hang.
I'm 10 or 11. It's time for me to start my next adventure.
Still dubious on that, but
Maeve considers what Trev has put forth here and is like, I think Trev's got the right idea, but if we're going to do this, it seems to me we're going to have to do it in a coordinated effort. Like, if we broadcast on one tower, that's just going to raise the alert in the other two and make it that much harder to get our message out. And I don't know if just broadcasting to one is going to cut it. You know, we've never been able to accomplish much separately. It's only when the towers work together that anything gets done for good or ill. And I think we're going to need that power on our side here. So if we're going to do this, I think we need to hit all three, and we need to hit them all at the same time.
Coordinated effort. Nice.
Well, I must say it. I really appreciate what you kids are doing here. Sorry, I know I've been just sort of loitering over by the edge there, but my name is Stanch. Nice to meet you all.
Yeah, I was gonna say, was he an, like, I'm so sorry. I thought you were like a narc. He's not a narc. Who's he with?
Well, I hope you're not using any unregulated substances, but...
I told you he was real.
Maeve looks him up and down and is like, and are we sure, like, just because I mentioned it earlier, we're sure that this guy isn't secretly Shimmer, because it feels like anytime we meet a new guy with a name, then a few days later it's like, oh, they were Shimmer.
I have seen files from the recesses of Trev's memory and can assure you this individual is who he claims to be.
Believe me, I've had my brushes with Shimmer, but I would not count myself among their friends.
Well, if you want to see him taken down a peg, then you're in the right place.
I was thinking, if you're looking to try and access that control station within Kindred, I might have some sort of route for you through the hyperlifts, but I don't know that that same sort of plan would extend to the other towers.
Ooh, if you're trying to get to a higher tower, I might have an idea of something for Langston.
Really, Charlotte? That's Plesta. Fill us in.
Yes, it's actually something I only realized recently, you know, since I became untethered. Sorry, Maeve, not to rub your nose in or anything. Sorry.
No, I know you're untethered, Charlotte. It's fine.
Oh, she's untethered. So am I. Talk about that. I ain't quite coincidence. Wow, I think that's pretty neat. There's two of us here untethered here. Sorry about that. Yeah, sorry. We didn't mean to do that. Sorry, not that. So.
What's untethered?
Well, see, there's this process of untethering, which we'll get to it later. We'll get to it later. Because I don't have that same sort of anchor to a specific dimension, I've been able to understand more about the space-time matter of Operablum itself. And while there are thin zones that lead between different dimensions, there are also some of those thin zones that connect parts of Operablum with itself. I think there might be some thin zones that could get us access to a higher point in the tower, and Langston is the least likely to have done any looking into these things on its own. So we might be able to find some unregulated ones that could take us right up top.
Well, that's two down. Anyone got any insight into how we're going to move through Web Tower undetected?
I think BRB and the Wix and Bradley all look at Helix.
I don't know. And that, like, shakes him to his core, because he's the smarts.
Yeah.
And having to be like, I don't know. I've never been up to floors that high in Web. I don't know what their biometric security is. And frankly, mine has been compromised.
Well, you did the whole thing with Wilkie's lab. How'd you even get there?
Wilkie's exists in a pocket dimension.
I thought it was in Web, though.
I mean, we did have to get access to a higher floor to get into the pocket dimension, and that involved a lot of thumb swapping, but that...
That ship has sailed. Like, that's where I was going with my lack of unique DNA signature.
Perhaps it's just a matter of getting another thumb.
I guess the black market is the only option we know about, so, I mean, black market thumb is the idea to beat people. Let's all put on our brainstorming caps, but we'll have that in our back pocket, buying a thumb on the black market.
Tybalt, how do you feel about getting a new thumb?
He has two thumbs up and just looks at them, and he's like, yeah, sure, I don't know.
Okay, I guess new thumb, maybe I... You know, I gave away my DNA, my biometrics. Maybe it's time I adopt a new one.
Your phone rings, Helix.
What's Helix's ringtone?
It's the theme to Stunts.
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
Helix Pinnacle speaking.
Hey, you wanted me to call you. It's Shart.
Yes, hi, Shart. Thank you for taking my call.
Bradley bursts into giggles.
I heard you had, like, a really, like, sick stunt that you could get, like, me and Mogi to do or something.
Yes, I'm hoping I can call any of the stuntsmen available to run interference. A bit of a favor, considering what you put us through on that episode and how it all played out.
Great, you're welcome.
If you all could make your way to the highest floor of Web Tower you can find yourself access to, your participation in a, let's call it an improvised prank stunt would be incredibly valuable to me right now.
Okay, you want us to, like, pull off a stunt in, like, Web Tower? Like, what floor are we talking here?
As high as you can get.
Okay, give me a number, though.
Yeah, floor 5, specifically the Pinnacle Project. Anything associated with the Pinnacle Project.
Okay, so like, just to like double check, because we ran into this before, it's not like literally the 5th floor, because then we're going to like die or whatever.
No, it's 500. I had the same problem when I first came to Operablum. It's 500. They call it 5.
500.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like it's a colloquial thing.
Yeah, yeah, we should be able to make that work.
Incredible.
Are we like really like raising a big stink?
Precisely. I need the biggest stink in stunts history. I need all eyes on you and Mogi.
Yeah, yeah, we can make that happen. Okay, so thoughts on... Okay, I'm just going to run a quick checklist by you here. Mm-hmm. Fire ants.
Please.
any peanut allergies? We do stuff with peanut butter sometimes.
None that I'm aware of. Most people at that floor level have their allergies bioengineered out.
Perfect. Oh, yeah, Mogi, we can do the peanut butter trick. he rattles off a couple more, but basically, suffice to say that you got Mogi and Chart in your corner.
Incredible.
You said something about a big distraction. If this web tower is as, you know, intense as you say it is, then... maybe that's the place where you pull out all the stops. You guys probably know this, but like when you're facing up against someone who's like super organized and coordinated and really good at what they do, they're pretty hard to shake. But once you shake them, it gets pretty hard to recover. So maybe you need all the distraction you can get.
Well, if the stuntsmen are successful in throwing the Pinnacle Project into disarray, it really is the golden goose of Web Corporation. If all eyes are on Stunts and Pinnacle, then we should have a clear shot of the control room.
So it sounds like we are going to have to divide and conquer, and that means we have to decide of the people in this room who's going where. I guess first and foremost, everybody here, is there anyone who's not ready to participate in this mission? Because, you know, we can't ask you to... everyone's free to walk away right now, but now is the time to do it, because from here on out... we need to be coordinated, so...
I know they say leave the future to the youth, but I don't think they mean it this literally.
everyone else sort of exchanges looks, and they kind of vary, I think, between the Slug Blasters, K-Jump, Decembria, maybe Mondo, the Wicks. They have a bit of a daring look in their eyes, like, yeah, I dare you to walk away. Sure, like, we're not going to do it because we're heroes, but, like, if you need to walk away, that's fine kind of thing. And Brably is, like, punching his hand. He's just like, he's so amped. He's so amped.
Maeve, despite herself, leans over to Helix and is like, we should probably find a job for him that isn't, like, directly in the line of fire, yeah? I mean, Brably can hang, but he is very small.
I don't know. I think he's got the heart of a champion.
I mean, fair enough.
Truly, I think he might grow up to be the very best, like no one ever was.
Well, then, all that's left to decide is who's going where.
We're going to cut away here, and I'm going to take a moment to explain some of the mechanics of what's going to happen in this run. So your goal is get to the 3 ad centers in the 3 towers of Operablum and deliver this ad. You have a few different ways of doing it, taking lifts, taking portal zones, causing a distraction to draw attention away from yourself. I am going to set up 4 tracks. They are all going to be danger tracks.
Oh.
3 out of 4 tracks are 4 letters each, fail, and they are specific to each tower. So if you mark all 4 spots on any one danger track, you are unable to deliver the ad to the tower. There will be a 4th track. It will be 8 marks. Security. If you fully mark that danger track, you cannot proceed further with your mission. It has been quashed. Every time one of the shorter danger tracks is marked, the longer danger track will be marked.
Sick. I love the math on that. That's dope.
So, what this means is you can deliver this ad successfully to 0, 1, 2, or 3 towers. And what I will say to you now is, if you get all 3,
that will be the most effective. Everyone in Operablum will get your message. There is no way that it will be misconstrued, and there may be a little mechanical something-something for you at the end of this. But if you get two, it won't be as pretty. And if you only get one, it's gonna be pretty bad. Now, as for the people that you have recruited, some of them are going to have advantages in specific towers. Stanch is familiar with the hyperlifts in Kindred. Charla is an arborist that primarily works out of Lansden Tower. The stunts guys have been through Web Tower before. Somehow, they had clearance. Who knows how? But some of the people on your team may be good in any tower. Each NPC has a specific advantage that will be revealed when you use it.
GM, I have a question.
I have an answer.
What happens if, like, I assume, you know, if one of us is in a party that is raiding one of these towers, we will get opportunities to roll successes and mark the track and accomplish the thing, move through checkpoints. What happens if we send a group of all NPCs to go deal with one of the towers for us? How do we determine if they complete or fail that mission?
Remember last run where you rolled for your crew and I rolled for BRB?
Mm-hmm.
If you send only NPCs, that means I'm rolling. I am going to roll 1 or 2d6, depending on who you send. And they narratively have resources at their disposal, but mechanically as a GM, I don't have booster kick. So what I roll is what you got.
So it's just luck of the dice, and if you happen to roll more successes than, or more failures than successes, then we fail that tower.
Yeah, that means like it's a 50-50 shot on every roll that it's a success failure, which is not a great...
We cut back. You start to make plans, figure out who would be the best person to go where, and in the midst of figuring things out, figuring out where people are going to go, Bradley actually goes around and makes sure that each team has a Dibovice. Now, Bradley is 10, 11, somewhere in there, and more than one person has expressed reservations about him putting himself directly in the line of fire, and so he is hanging back. But he wants to make sure that everyone has communication, so each team has a Gashapon 1 Dibovice with just like the most beginner trainer Dibokin. But Bradley has made sure that you're all in the same Dibokin party, which means you can use your Dibovices to communicate with each other.
Inspired choice, Bradley. That's really clever. Good job, bud.
There's a certain function where they can even have tea parties together.
We should do that sometime. And Walt, Carcinogen is the last person that Bradley is plugging in to add to his party, or to make sure that you're still in the party, because maybe you were already in the same Dibokin party. Who knows how you roll? And as he does this, he says, "So this is like serious stakes. Like Viperkin told me about what was going on, and it really sounded pretty intense, but like it really is, huh?"
"Yeah, it's a bit of a big deal, but I should have known the word would get to you somehow. I can't keep anything between a Dibokin and their trainer."
"Yeah." "Yeah. So I guess if things are really going to be that bad, you probably need, like, lots of help to make sure nothing, like, happens to you guys or whatever. So, I want you to have this." And he reaches into his pocket and pulls out something, and he holds it out to you. And you recognize it instantly, because this is something that you worked with Bradley to power down. It is the Data Surge Dibovice that Brinley 1 gave to Bradley and that you worked to take out of his Daibo vice so that Viperkin wouldn't surge and go rogue.
Oh.
It's been a while since we've seen this bad boy, so to review, most Daibokin trainers of repute will work with their Daibokin buddy to put them through surge states and become bigger and more powerful. The Data Surge Daibo Vice automatically allows for a surge. Very similar to how your neural network functions. I don't know, it's just like, in case you like really, really need Arthurkin for like a... and you need him to not revert or something. I had held on to it, so...
Thanks, Bradley. That means a lot. And thank you again for these Daibokin communicators as well. It'll be really handy having you here, but the first sign of trouble, I want you to make your way back to Zenith 98 Hub, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'll stay out of trouble. And he puts his hand behind his back.
Yeah. Sure you will, bud. And Walt taps the brim of his rotating hat.
Helix, your phone rings.
Helix Pinnacle speaking.
Shart speaking. Hey, it's Shart.
Hi.
So listen, we have a bit of a problemo, I think. It might not be, but I just want to like triple check.
Go on.
Yeah, so we were looking into your, like, floor 500 thing, and, yeah, there are some places that we can get to, but there's, like, one spot that's just like a no-can-do situation, my guy.
Which spot is that?
Like, directly in the center of the tower. Let's see, yeah, Pinnacle Project.
Well, that's where I was hoping to go. How close can you get?
Like, pretty dang close. There's, like, a sort of, like... front area, and then there's like a mid area, and then there's like a back area, and then there's like a back and off to the side area, and then there's an area that looks like a big lab, and it looks like there might be like some secrets in that lab, maybe. But you know, we're purely speculating here because yeah, we can't access that.
Oh, don't worry, I can get you into there. You get as close as you can. I have the biometrics needed to get into that organization. It's called the Pinnacle Project, and I can get you in the front door once you're in, brute force your way through whatever you need to do.
Sick. So, like, are you, like, the, heir to the CEO? Or because, like, your last name is Pinnacle. Is it, like, a family empire situation?
Yes. I'm the golden boy of Web.
Hell yeah.
Before we get too much further here, Helix, can I get... a d6 roll, please.
5.
You're in the clear. No slam for you, but your slam counter goes up to 2.
Well, we'll see if we even survive this before I worry about what the Pinnacle Project has in store for him.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. You all finish laying out the plans. You know what needs to happen next. And everyone sort of like clusters back in their groups again. The Wicks have come together. BRB has come together. Even Mad Method are talking to each other in like kind of hushed, serious tones. And Gold Star Disaster, the four of you come together before you split up.
Everyone's got their assignment. We all know where we're going.
Indeed.
I guess we're not all gonna see each other again for a while, or, I mean, if this goes badly, maybe for a long while, so, good luck out there, everybody. We're gonna need it.
I can't imagine a crew more capable, determined, and representative of the Intertower spirit the Triskelion base is meant to elicit. It is... the risk of sounding sappy. It has been an honor to work with you all, from the tightwads at the Pinnacle Project to the crazy nuts at the stunts crew. I realize the middle is just friends you can trust, and I treasure what we've created here together.
Yeah, I never would have thought that first day when we rented an old robot from the
from the robot store and went to go take on the Wicks that this is where it was all going to lead. But I'm glad it did. I know it means we had a hand in bringing Operabum to this point, but that just means we have to have a hand in pulling it back from the brink, too.
Let's show Shimmer that they can't mess with Gold Star Disaster.
Vux, yeah.
I am very happy to be a part of such an elite team, but also a bunch of elite friends. It means a lot. And if this does not work out, it's going to be glorious. It will be, at the very least, a Gold Star Disaster.
Yeah. Let's do it for Brinley. Gold Star Disaster on three.
It puts two hands in.
Felix puts his hand in.
Trev puts his hand in.
One, two, three.
Gold Star Disaster!
Hello there, Gold Star listeners. It's Milena, your Slugmaster Game Blaster. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Quantum Kickflip. If you've been enjoying Quantum Kickflip, tell a friend, leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It would mean the world to us. You can support us by following us at Quantum Kickflip on social media, where we post new episode updates, audiograms, and more. You can also support us by subscribing to Quantum Kickflip on Patreon. For just $2 a month, you can join the Shredder tier and get access to all new episodes of Quantum Kickflip 2 days early. Or for $5 a month, you can join the Ultranaut tier and get early access plus exclusive bonus content. Did you listen to our most recent interview where Robin asked me questions about season 2? Well, you can listen to interviews with all of the players, personal stories, bonus games, outtakes, and so much more if you subscribe today at patreon.com/quantumkickflip. New game alert! From Mikey Ham, the creator of Slug Blaster, comes a brand new solo adventure, Two Hand Path. In this roll-and-write adventure, you fight through monsters using a polyhedral Yahtzee-inspired combat system and draw power-ups directly on the hands illustrated on your character sheet. Every character sheet is unique. What will your hands look like by the end of the game? Two Hand Path was fully funded on Kickstarter within 6 hours. You can pre-order your very own copy of the game using the link in the show notes of this episode. I'd like to thank our sponsors at the Alberta Media Arts Alliance Society, whose goal is to advocate, educate, and celebrate the media arts in Alberta. You can learn more by going to amaas.ca. We release Quantum Kickflip bi-weekly, so you can catch the continuation of our finale of Season 2 on Wednesday, April 17th. Let's get you back to the action! In Kindred Multiversal Megatower, in Zenith 98 Hub, we join up with Trev4, Wanda, Wendy, and Whitney Wick, and Stanch Lufts. Your mission is to make it to floor 841 in Hard Kindred, the most remote vertex of the tower. How you gonna get there?
Well, it does seem if we need to go up, the best way is to use the elevator. But not just any elevator. My good friend Stanch here has given me access to a very special one. Please come follow me. And like I start...
Whitney was giving you some hard side eye and she was about to do like a slow clap when you're like, the solution is to take the elevator. But then you kept talking about Stanch and she like respectfully lowered her hands.
And we, you know, go through the back ways to, I guess we would have to go up a few floors.
You would, yes. Yeah. Your elevator, the lowest point that your elevator reaches is where you had met up with Stanch and he had sort of presented it to you. Right. Floor 211, not that far. And I sort of pictured it to be kind of on an outer edge of Kindred Tower, maybe between like the Kindred Web vertex and the Hard Kindred vertex kind of thing, like along that wall?
So then we'd probably take one of the normal elevators up, right?
To, yeah. You have no problem getting to 211 at all.
And we get there, go into the service hallway, open up the door, and you reveals Trev's apartment, which has everything like neatly, not spaced, but like in an order. So like there's the plug-in on the in the back corner. There's the little box where the scrubby bot hangs out. And right next to that, like right next. So there's no sense of style. It's just like here and then here and here.
Yeah.
And Trev has print out a bunch of photos of friends from his memory files that he has just like screenshots. But once again, they don't have any sense of style. They start up in the top left corner, one right next to each other, going across.
In like a grid?
Yeah, in a
chronological.
Chronological.
Can it also be assumed that these aren't like good photogenic images? They're just like, ah, yes, the person is in this when I scroll through.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I recognize
this
them.
This is an unflattering
frame. Facial recognition pings. Yeah, it's a photo of Walt.
And so there's a bunch of those, and it only goes partway down, and like it stops like mid row or whatever. So it's not, there's no sense of style to it.
Trev placing them on his wall and coming to the mid wall and be like, "Well, I will just have to get more friends."
It seems I need more friends. And then on the other side, there is a replica painting of a butterfly that's there. That is a very specific Three's Company reference. There's a butterfly painting. So that's up on the one wall.
Also,
up in the top left corner. Like, that's where it orients. It would make sense.
Centered.
It would make sense.
Flush with the wall and ceiling.
It's flush. And it's such a weird thing. So it'd be up in the corner and only reach, like, three quarters of the way across. So there's a weird little strip.
What do you do with that? Nothing.
Impossible. And please come into my home. Please ignore the mess. It is spotless. And it's just that's something that people say. Everybody kind of crowds in.
I was going to say, remind me, Michael, this Stanch was the one who provided this elevator. How big is it?
Not.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, the idea of Trev getting his own apartment was very much like Bender's apartment at the start of Futurama.
That was the vibe I had as well, that it can fit like a person.
Yeah.
Like two.
Oh, like very,
like very small.
Like one of those stand-up showers.
Yeah. And maybe it's like, maybe it's a little roomy. I mean, like, you can put two people in a shower if you're nasty.
And I am, but that's a different point.
Yeah.
We can...
Three's so, company, four three's is a crowd.
It's not a bathtub shower situation.
Your apartment literally fits three people. Three's company.
Oh my God.
I would see think that the pad where he would stand would take a good portion of the foot space
the square footage, the one square footage.
But Trev, of course, doesn't have a problem fitting into the corner. Like, he can, like,
he comes in and
flush.
He just, like, gestures, like, well, come on in, guests.
There's plenty of room. And so I assume Stanch, like, we're going to have to crowd into this. And he doesn't...
Wendy is... Whitney is just, like, fully, like, taking it all in. And you can tell that she's deeply appreciative of your sense of style. And Wendy says, this is cozy.
Thank you. I tried to make it as comfortable as possible.
You've done a wonder with the decor, Trev, I gotta say. That's a tight squeeze. Okay.
If it helps, we can maybe stack on top of each other.
Oh, Trev, no, please don't climb onto... Oh, okay.
No, don't worry. I'll be okay. Oh, wait. I'm much heavier than you. I am so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm not as
I did not
as I
consider...
Was,
I can tell that you just slipped a disc in your back. I am so sorry.
Oh, part of the realm where... Then.
Oh. Whitney's looking up at the ceiling, which is like, I don't know, like 7 feet up.
Yeah.
It's not very high. You can't stack people like head to foot. Or whatever. I'm just picturing that's what Trev 4 was picturing.
There is, of course, like a little bit of trouble of like getting the door closed. Like we had to like shift and everything like that before like the door would like do that thing of like, oh, everybody's beyond the barrier or whatever. And then once it's in, it's like, Whitney, please hit the highest number. What is the highest number on the elevator?
That's a good question, and I think to get the answer for this, let's get a roll.
A roll?
How high does your apartment go, Trev?
Yeah.
So I'm just rolling a d6, I guess. I don't know how else to modify this. That's a 2.
Okay, it goes up to floor 6.
So this is to floor 600.
Yeah.
Okay. Whitney, please hit 600 for us.
Whitney presses 6, and the elevator starts to go up.
And we do stand in silence as we are awkwardly going all the way up, and you can hear the elevator music playing. Normally, it's not in the service elevators, but Trev did like the elevator music.
He made the decision to put that in.
Yeah, that's very much...
Great.
It's in all the other lifts, so, you know.
Very good.
So, the three of you, your friends, cousins, your...
We're sisters!
Oh.
And we're slug blasters!
Oh, that's swell, I...
Do you know what a slug
I leaned right into you on that one. I am so sorry.
Do you even know what a slug blaster is, Grandpa?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have any grandchildren. It's actually a bit of a touchy subject. Perhaps not the conversation for now.
No, maybe not. Yeah. And you can tell that like Wendy's looking kind of uncomfortable. Like she stepped into a situation that she did not want to step into, but she also does not have the social graces to bow out.
I think we're doing a great job at bonding. just the fact that Stan said something vulnerable. It's like, that's how what bonding
that's how
is.
Bonding works. Yeah. You get to floor 6. Your single elevator managed to get you that far. The doors open and the 5 of you spill out rather unceremoniously. It was a very, very tight squeeze to get all of you in there. And you find yourselves in a remote hallway. It is, again, on the outer wall of Operabum, and clearly this is a not well-known elevator.
Right.
So for a moment, you're kind of in the clear, and you round the corner, and then you realize... what sort of made this hallway so remote, and where you are. To your right, through like a sort of decorative glass wall, you realize that you're looking right into the bullpen of the sword sliders.
Oh.
Yikes.
It is very sleek looking. I'm picturing, like, everything is, like...
I was imagining...
It's a very saturated color. Whatever color you think is associated with the sword sliders, think of, like, the most, like, saturated version of that. What are we thinking? Red?
Red feels right.
Red feels right? Yeah, just, like, it's, like, crimson accents along the desks and
walls.
A lot
of glossy... You know, like, when it's, like, glossy plastic white kind of thing? But it's, like, glossy
red.
Yeah, like, I'm imagining the Men in Black headquarters.
Because, of course, they are all garbed head to toe. toe in black.
Yeah.
This place is very much like populated by people like at their desks doing jobs. There might be a side room across where, you know, it's a closed door, but it looks like maybe someone might be like giving a conference to trainees. So you're about to go through a like very dangerous area.
And of course, around people that are in a very agitated environment. If you had to go into like bright red into your office every day, just be like, you would be not.
Yeah.
You would be fully stressed. You'd be ready to fight all the time.
Yeah. And they are. They will throw down. Someone comes in and like they put a form down on someone else's desk, and you see them start to get into a really heated argument about how it's a form 512B instead of a form 512C.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like people have to come in and break them up. Like a robot has to come and stand in between them and like use arm extenders to push them apart from each other. This is a powder keg, is what I'm saying.
It's probably like a Trev unit of one sort. Just
yeah.
Like,
oh, you know what? It is absolutely. It's a Trev 11. Yeah.
I guess I'm going to use my omniscience aperture to kind of like see through walls into objects all around. Try to get like where, what am I thinking? Am I thinking going up to another elevator? Yeah, we have an elevator tech. So it makes sense that we would probably try to find just another one that would like allow us to go higher.
Yeah.
And so maybe I would refer to Stanch if there is one where it might be, and I can try to map to it.
Yeah.
Is it pretty much I have to pass this bullpen?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you are able to, like, figure out where it is in a way that you're not, like, guessing where the next elevator is going to be. You know exactly where the you need to go, and you can lead the way with Stanch's help.
Okay.
But you do have to make it past this bullpen without them detecting you.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to use a roll using my aperture to, like, kind of, like, calculate where people are moving and looking, like, trying to track eyes and, like, where people are looking. I assume the tricky part, like in my brain, I'm looking down a hallway. We're kind of seeing into it to a degree, but there's a moment where we're going to have to go from here to get underneath the window that looks into the bullpen. And then that would be our path past them, right? But there'd be that like one moment where we're going to be kind of in the open getting underneath the window, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to use my aperture to try to like time it out and like now go and like do it one at a time.
You know. So many stealth video games where you have to wait for it to not be in their eye line and then dart to your next hiding place.
Yeah. So I'm keeping constant track and like getting people across one at a time. We can't really go all at once, I would imagine. So I'm going to roll that. I'm going to add a D6 from my turbo, one from my attitude. So I'm going to roll 3D6. A 1, a 4, and a 5.
5, mixed success.
Yes.
All right, you get your attitude back because you rolled a success. You did roll a problem. You rolled a couple problems now, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So we are marking 2 spots on the kindred fail track.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I wasn't sure if the elevator one counted or not.
I wasn't sure either, but I think I am going to make it count.
So, like, anything short of a 6 is a failure.
Any complication marks the track. Okay. Yes. All right. Describe your maneuvers.
Trev goes first and scoots across, and I'm like taking Stanch by the hand and like leading him down. We're getting underneath the window, and Trev is able to kind of like everybody else has to crawl, but Trev to go. He's squatting and his like legs are kind of like rotating in a weird way, so he's staying like up like this, but his legs are moving in a weird way, so he stays low. And the others are, I'm waving the others across, and we start heading down the hallway. We see our clearance just up ahead that opens into a wider kind of thing. Would people recognize us right away of like, you shouldn't be up here? Like, how do people know you're not supposed to be there? Is it an ID you have? Like, or is it like some other way that they tell that you're not there?
I mean, where you are right now, I don't think is a super public area.
Sure.
Right? That's part of the advantage of your elevator and the fact that it goes as high as it does, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if this was an area that people were able to access with regularity, you probably wouldn't have been able to get even this high,
right?
So the fact that this is sort of a sword slider establishment, it's a little bit more reserved. So there's a bit of that implicit feeling that, like, if you're meant to be here, you're meant to be here kind of thing. But we're gonna stay zeroed in on the sword sliders here. I think what's going to happen, you mentioned there's like an opening and then you have to duck and get under the window, right? I think there's an opening like that on the other side as well. The three of you make it past the first opening and are safely underneath the window out of sight.
Yep.
You signal to Wanda and Whitney, and they time it out, and they dart down, and they are under the window and out of sight. You wait, figure it out, time it out, dart past the second opening to find yourself sort of around the corner where the hallway is starting to widen out, and the elevator is very close at this point. And it is when Wanda and Whitney dart past the second opening that they don't quite avoid the eyeline of one of the sword sliders. And you hear someone say, "Hey, hey, who is that? What are you doing? We got a code Sienna. Code Sienna?" There are variations on red.
Degrees of red?
Yeah.
You do not want a code crimson.
Oh, God, no.
Pale code rose, pink. Pale rose.
Code salmon, code salmon.
Funny enough, it's when there's this fish around, fish-based problem.
We have been spotted. Make it to the elevator, post haste. And and we start, I think, going for the elevator. I don't think we're going to...
Okay, so it sounds like this is a speed play.
Yeah.
Great. Half a dozen sword sliders burst out of the entrance to the bullpen, which runs parallel to this hallway that you've now turned down. So they are hot on your heels, and just up ahead of you is the elevator. You need to get there, and you need to make sure those doors close before they get through. And it is at this point that we are going to cut away. In Web Corporation Mega Tower, on floor 5, at the very center point of the tower, we join up with Helix Pinnacle, Mondo, Decembria, and Hanser. Helix, you had spoken to Shart from Stunts.
Yeah.
And clarified where you were going to meet. And he didn't seem to have any particular concern about where you were going to meet. So you are basically in front of the Pinnacle Project.
Yeah.
There's sort of that, the Pinnacle Project is sort of broken down in a few different ways. There is the residential area of the Pinnacle Project where variables such as yourself live with their foster families. And then there's sort of the hub itself, which is the area that Chart told you he could not access.
Yes.
This consists of a bunch of different rooms. There's sort of like the front kind of lobby area. Behind that is where your maker space is with your bonsai tree. Behind that is the sort of area where you get your diagnostics, your nutrient intakes, that kind
the
of
labs,
thing.
Yeah.
And then past that starts to become areas that you can't access. The offices that belong to your handlers, your doctors, that kind of thing.
And this goes deeper into Web Tower, like hard web?
Yeah, definitely. And so it is right in front of this lobby door where Walt and Trev went to look for you so many episodes ago that the four of you meet up with Mogi and Shart.
Thank you everyone for meeting me here. You'll have to apologize for my low profile I'm keeping, and I think he's got a like a Wilkie's hat, like a ball cap. Oh, you know what? He's got the Wilkie's balaclava.
The balaclava with the W on the back.
From the last one.
Great.
Because this is the first time he's been back to the Pinnacle Project since Bok inadvertently kind of compromised his position within the organization and signed him up to be a variable. He is worried that at any moment Ginevra or one of the handlers are going to like grab him and drag him somewhere where the controls are, the true controls are.
Right.
So he's a little skittish, but thank you everyone for meeting Mogi and Shark. This is Decembria, Hanser, and Mondo. Those two.
Hey, it's good to see you again, Helix. Nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance.
Yeah, well, I can't believe that you know these guys from Stance. That's why I didn't give you enough credit, Webb's Golden Boy.
Well, you're all here as agents of chaos, whether it's by reputation and references the stunts guys, or maybe not a title you have necessarily want, but I've certainly experienced, and sort of like gives a knowing look to Mad Method as like, yeah, you guys are kind of shit sometimes.
I'll take it.
Mondo lazily swings his laser scythes.
So I'm going to be counting on the stunts guys to draw the attention of everyone in this area. We're at a bit of a hub here, or the entrance to a hub that has all aspects of the Pinnacle Project, the residencies, the makerspace, the labs, worse, deeper, what have you. So Jacksonville, whatever you've got up your sleeve, I'm into it. Mad Method, you're going to come with me and you're going to help me breach some of the harder to breach areas that I don't necessarily have access to. But like I told you, Shart, I can get you in. And for the first time in days, Helix puts his biometrics up to the Pinnacle Project lab entrance or lobby entrance, basically announcing to anyone who's reading those things that
Helix Pinnacle has entered the Pinnacle Project.
In the house.
All right. The doors open and you enter the Pinnacle Project. I think these first couple of rooms are not entirely uninhabited, right? Mm-hmm. At any given time, variables of the Pinnacle Project are here vibing, doing their thing, getting diagnostics run, getting their nutrients, all that jazz. So the sight of all of you walking through is going to turn some heads. And I think one such member of the Pinnacle Project kind of squints at you because you're wearing the balaclava and says, are you here to learn more about the Pinnacle Project? Is there something that we can assist you with? Because right now you're still in the area where it's like, it's fine if the public is here, but it's not common.
Yeah.
The deeper you go, the harder it's going to be to justify your presence here. So this is level one sure. that I'm giving to y'all right now.
A skateboard team isn't not welcome at the Children's Hospital, but why are a bunch of professional skaters walking around a Children's Hospital?
Exactly.
So Helix just keeps walking and leaves that question to be answered by the stunts guys. He's like, Mad Method know to follow him.
Yeah, and Mogi, like, all right, Shart, okay, get the camera going, okay.
Got it. Rolling.
I'm Mogi Jacksonville, and this is the Golden Boy. And he tears off his shirt and his pants. He has been drinking so much pop for the last 24 hours. and then Shart like hands him like this like little cage, and inside of it is this rare scorpion from Vestige that like he takes it and stabs it right into the onto his dick, and it just opens him up. Because when you're running, normally you don't piss, but this opens up the, and he starts running naked through the thing, piss going wherever he's going, and so it's like splattering on things and going, getting on forms.
What does the scorpion have to do with it?
Because normally if you're running, like,
yeah,
you won't be peeing.
Oh, this is enough to pee, but whatever toxins in it, his pee just
I need to pee now, and I need to not stop peeing.
Sure.
And he's flying all over. He's jumping on tables and like does a quick helicopter, and he gets out and runs.
I think it's like combination lobby, and like maybe they do follow you into the back a little bit as well.
Sure.
and it is pandemonium instantly. I will need a roll from you to see how all of this goes and how far you get before things get real problematic for you.
Sure.
You are using Stunt's crew to access something you shouldn't be able to access.
Sure.
And for using their advantage, you get plus 1d6 for free.
Incredible. I'm going to do the 1d6 I get, the one you're giving me, and just one more from my attitude.
Okay. 3d6.
3d6 to just see how well this distraction goes to let me move on to the next area. I understand I'm going deeper into the Pinnacle Project, but I also need to go up, right, to get to where this ad center is?
Yes.
Great. So, yeah, we've got these guys causing the distraction. I think Helix, you know, not only does he need all eyes on the Pinnacle Project to keep heat off of him and Mad Method going even higher to get to where this broadcast center is, but like we said, we need to either reach out to the black market or some other way to get biometrics that allow us up that high.
Yeah.
And he figures, well, what better store of biometrics, especially prestige, powerful, important biometrics than within the Pinnacle Project? So kind of two bird, one stone. He is both going to cause the distraction here at Pinnacle Project and get the keys he needs to go up the tower in the same spot.
Dig it. Do you have a specific area that you were looking to find these biometrics?
In the labs or farther back. Yeah.
Yeah, say basically wherever you shouldn't be.
Yeah,
that's where you need
wherever
to go.
I'm not allowed, there's probably a key to get me into a more not allowed space.
If you want to try and knock out finding these biometrics in the same role, I will allow that with a kick.
Great. Then 3d6. The d6 for the distraction and the kick for getting Helix and Mad Method deep enough to find a biometrics that he can steal of some form.
Sounds good.
A 6, also a second 6, and a 4.
All right, that is a success if I've ever heard it. Mogi is running back and forth between the lobby and the back room. Shart is following him with the camera as closely as he can. At one point, Shart pulls out a second scorpion and throws it at Mogi, and it like latches onto his nipple.
It's peeing and latching.
Swells up immediately. Yeah, immediate purple situation. Yeah. And this gets you to the back door.
Come get your piss!
You get past that into the diagnostic center, and you are able to get up to the door that you have not been through yet. What do you do from here?
So as Helix approaches this door that he otherwise wouldn't have had access to, of course, he gave his biometrics to Jericho Zebulax in return for access to other things. And all right, Jericho, I really hope you've held up your end of the bargain. Here goes nothing. And he puts his thumb to the reader. He assumes it's not going to work because it would have never worked, but Jericho comes through.
It scans, and the door opens.
Incredible. Come on. And ushers Mad Method in behind him.
They rush through. I think they're sort of... You find yourself in sort of a hallway with doors on either side. Each door is like kind of has like a frosted glass sort of pane on it. You get the vibe. And in fact, I think they have like names engraved into the panes. Mm-hmm. So you can see that these are like individual offices of your handlers. Mm-hmm. And then straight across is a set of double doors.
I suspect those double doors are going to lead to a hyperlift that'll get us to the level we need to be to make this broadcast. But I doubt Jericho's goodwill extends that far. So we're going to have to steal some biometrics to get us even farther. Maybe should I go and test to see if I can get into that double door?
You could test to see if you can get through that door.
Helix realizes he shouldn't make any assumptions and runs to go. He's like, wait here, cover me, Mad Method, and like hauls ass on his hoverboard down this hallway, past all of the handlers to this door on the end, and he goes, Jericho, are we 2 for 2? And puts his thumb to that door at the end.
It scans. The door's open. And I think what's going to happen here is there's been a big ruckus that's been going on. You have Mad Method at your back, and you've opened these double doors. They slide open. And simultaneously in this big sort of lab space, similar to what you have for you at the Pinnacle Project, but clearly this is for the other side of the Pinnacle Project, mm-hmm. the doctors and such. In the makerspace and also coming out of the office doors are some of these handlers.
Yeah.
Now,
there's a piss freak in the lobby.
Yeah. there's quite a few of them.
Yeah.
You are, of course, four slug blasters, so the advantage is tipped in your favor here. But I will need a roll just to see how you sort of deal with them. Some of them are pulling out, like, very, like the equivalent of, like, tasers and stun guns kind of things. Not, like, very high-tech slug blaster signature devices, kind of like basic security measures.
Yeah.
Some of them pull out needles because that's really threatening. And they're sort of like rushing up to you because they did not anticipate that this would happen, you know, at all.
Out of curiosity, what are the signatures of Mad Method?
Well, Mondo has his Negafriction twin scythes, small sort of handheld scythes that I believe are joined by a chain.
Yeah, two pairs of laser chain scythes styled after Kusarigama.
You have seen in the Waking Pits Hans use his fanny pack in a way that clearly there is a pocket dimension in that fanny pack. And you have yet to see a signature device wielded by Decembria.
Sure. Mondo, that's like a Negafriction sword, right? Ostensibly?
Yeah, they work pretty similar.
It's my understanding that those often have a mod that lets you just eliminate the friction in the room.
Oh, yeah. Way ahead of you, golden boy. Yeah, Mondo, with his many-armed skill of wielding these twin laser scythes, begins spinning around and slams both of them down into the ground further out from him, activating, I believe the ability is the
the field projector.
The field projector. I guess, as an NPC, do I have to roll to use this? Or does it just
happen? You don't have to roll to use it.
I'm rolling. You're my signature device.
I see. Yeah.
I think the others are also going to help.
Sure.
Of course. Decembria floats into the lab and creates a... She's doing something, but everyone starts, like, screaming and backing up. And one of them is like, ah, the gorilla rhino, get in here! And she's just like, she's kind of glowing a little bit as she's creating an illusion.
Sure.
She doesn't have a reality cannon. She just bends reality because she's a ghost.
little Scarlet Witch action into it. So yeah, for Mondo and for Decembria, then I'm going to roll 1d6 that I would get. And can I take one from the hype die?
Absolutely. Hype pool?
Yeah. Great. So I'm going to roll 2d6 for this one.
All right. And yes, if this succeeds, the scientists will essentially be neutralized and you will be able to make your way through the space.
Oh, that really did a top spin for a minute. The first one landed. It was a 3. The second one is a 6.
Yay. All right. Kick some ass.
Yeah. Mad Method handle all of these handler supervisor scientists. I've got the stunts guys handling Pinnacle Project regulars. And with this door open, Helix like hoverboards underneath whatever it is Decembria is doing unfazed. Whatever sort of insane illusion she's projecting, he just like keeps hard light boarding through it even deeper just to see how far the biometrics Jericho Zebulax gave him will get him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think in this area as well, you are going to be able to find the biometric data that you need, that you marked your kick to get. What form is this taking? Is this like a clipboard? Are you taking someone hostage? What's the situation here?
Ooh, yeah, he's looking around for some biometrics that are going to help him, you know, like a thumb in a jar or like a jar of DNA that he can inject himself. And he's realizing that's probably overly complicating things and just sees some dork with a clipboard, like, you know, filing away, ironically, piss samples.
Yeah.
And just yanks the key card off his neck, like off his lanyard.
Yeah.
And is like, I don't need biometrics if I've just got the key.
Hey, what do you do? Oh, gorilla rhino! And he doesn't do anything to stop you. You have the key card you need.
Yeah.
You are able to make your way through the Pinnacle Project. Something catches your eye.
Mm-hmm.
You do see an elevator door.
I bet this is the way we can go. Hanser, you're still free? Come with me.
I'm with you. Rush towards the elevator together. With your key card, you're able to open it, and you both sort of rush through. The door closes behind you, and it is only then that you realize there's one button.
It's one button. I press the button.
And you can tell from the sort of shift as the elevator moves, you're not going up. You're going down.
Oh, shit.
And we're going to cut away. Lansden Enterprise Megatower, emerging from the abandoned theater on floor 2, we meet up with Maeve, Wolt, Sharla, K-Jump, and Tibbles. You emerge from the abandoned theater on floor 2 and begin to follow Sharla as she makes her way through the tower, trying to find the thin zone that she knows can connect you within Operablum and can take you to a higher floor of Lansden Tower. It's a little bit slow going. Sharla really has to sort of tap into this feeling of connection with the multiverse, feeling out the entirety of the reality to sort of find where the holes are. The other challenge here is, for her, it's a point, right? And trying to find the most direct route to that point is a little bit tricky. I think at one point, you're sort of going from the sort of central wall where Trinity Municipal Park was, and you're making your way closer to one of the outer walls, kind of down some side hallways and stuff. Once again, Charlotte's not 100% sure where she's going, and you're still pretty low. I'd say maybe you're in the low threes at this point. But where you are is kind of a place where people don't typically tend to go. And I do think at one point you walk past a group of Operablins. Maybe there's like 3 of them. They're all wearing that very grayish brown kind of color of like work overalls. And between the 3 of them is a Lansden heavy hauler, and it's lugging some steel. one of them, he's got red cheeks and sweat on his brow. And he looks at all of you and he's like, "Are you supposed to be here?"
Yes, sorry, on important business. Keep heavy hauling. It's very hard to concentrate with your hauler here, please.
Yeah, it's arborist stuff. You understand.
Oh, we don't understand. What's arborist stuff?
Yeah, you know, multiversal harmony and whatnot.
Enough of this. No time to proselytize. If you want to go, you know where the temple is. We've been here for years.
I want to get a roll to see if you can convert these guys to arborists.
Does that count toward the danger track?
Yeah, how much do I care about this roll? Is this marking a danger track if I fail?
They are questioning if you have a right to be here, so I feel like a failure could land you in some hot water.
All right. Yeah, no, actually, I'm fully okay with this.
Okay, great. Yeah. Fabulous.
I want to... This is going to get us, like, further into where we need to go and get some heat off of us if we successfully convert these guys to arborism.
Yeah.
So Maeve starts going into this spiel, like, well, okay, so the arborists, you know about the arborists. They're, like, an order that oversees the harmony of the multiverse. They make sure that all the dimensions are in balance because there's other realities out there and, you know...
Hang on. There's other realities?
And so Maeve, underneath a rock.
Maeve takes a further step back and starts explaining the concept of a multiverse, and we don't need to hear it all, but I am going to roll.
Think about a Philly cheesesteak.
I'm gonna roll my 1d6 that I normally get. I'll add 1 from my attitude. Yeah, I think 2d6 feels right for this roll.
Yeah, you know what, let's make that a little bit sweeter. Sharla is with you, and as an arborist, you're moving through Lansden. You are trying to bluff specifically as arborists to say that you have a right to be here. So because you are using Sharla's advantage, you can add a d6 to your roll.
Beautiful. We have a 4. We have a 5. We have a 6.
Let's get the tail end of your speech.
And so that's basically the idea, is that, you know, that there's this entire multiverse, and each dimension has an impact on the dimensions around it, and we all need to live in such a way that everything is in balance and harmony at all times, so that you know, all of the dimensions can flourish as one, basically.
At this point, one of them is kind of like leaning against the hover hauler, and the other two are like listening very intently, and the one guy's like, "Oh wow, that's really insightful." That's
her whole speech has been like matter of fact, but also like kind of like, well, I guess since you asked, here's the basic, like, not passionate
it
at all.
It just resonates. Just like it, they, you are giving them straight facts, mm-hmm. and you're talking about harmony and togetherness. They are. You've said all the right things in all the right ways. Like, we gotta check out this temple sometime. Not now. We're on the clock. But yeah, next time we'll. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem.
and they let you go on your merry way.
We'll see you at the service on Blurn's Day. Yeah. It's Opera Rablin Sunday, you understand?
Robbie Blurn's Day?
Yeah, Robbie Blurn's Day.
You
Maybelline, thank you so much for taking that. You did a great job preaching there. At least I assume so. Sorry, I wasn't actually listening to any of it. I was really focusing on trying to commune. I think I know where the point is.
Well, that's good. Let's get a move on before more random men ask us about our worldviews.
You've overcome my very challenging and complex obstacle. And with that, you follow Sharla, more confident than ever that she is leading you exactly where you need to go. She approaches a set of double doors. This is it.
This is it.
She opens the doors. And as you step through, you immediately realize that it's just a cacophony of noise. And you look around and you see conveyor belts with machinery evenly spaced moving through the space. Then it's being picked up by a big magnet that looks like a big disc, and it lifts it up and moves it over to it. There's a vat and it's pouring stuff into a mold. It's hot, but then it goes through a thing and steam erupts from it. And as Sharla points out, it is on the other side of this factory that the Thin Zone exists.
Is it, can we, like, is there a discernible thing that this factory is producing, or is it like just classic factory vibes? There's like, there cogs and gears going down conveyor belts, and no discernible, like, or how do these things all come together? What do they make? No clue.
A factory for producing products.
Yeah. It's making tools. No.
Yeah.
But I can also see, like, you know, Lansden making, you know, that a lot of the lower floors have been, like, cleared out, and that they're trying different ways to sort of purify the fog, right?
Yeah.
That's one of their tactics. So I think that these could be some of the units that are eventually going to go into that warehouse.
Nah, don't nail it down. I talked myself out of this as I was describing it.
It's
the vaguer, the better.
It's making apertures and whizgigs and doodads and tchotchkes.
Medium-sized widgets.
Maeve cracks both sets of knuckles and looks over at Walton, who's like, "Well, I was worried this was all just going to be, you know, communing with the fabric of the multiverse and talking our way through awkward social interactions, but factory floor full of dangerous-looking machinery. This finally looks like slug blasting to me."
Show us how it's done, babe.
No.
I loved it. So it looks like we're going to need a team role here, and I may have volunteered myself to lead it just now, which I'm realizing was maybe stupid because the chill gets to roll with two. But I guess I'm leading this one. I am going to use a d6 from my attitude, I'm going to use a d6 from my photonic jacket. That gets us at 3.
And you're rolling a team roll.
Mm-hmm.
So that's BRB's advantage. Add another d6.
Add another d6? Nice. Don't mind if
nice
I do.
Nice reveal. We waited till he added all his dice and then told him.
That's very good. No, I'll take it. I'll roll 4d6. I am going to do a trick about it, because as much as we are, you know, it's save the world time, but we're still slug blasters. I still need style. So I am going to do a trick. I might regret that. I don't know how many tricks I want to pull on this run because, you know, sure, the stakes are high. So if we were to mark a kick about it, could we get double style?
Yeah.
All right.
I'd throw a kick to you for that.
Yeah, I'll take a kick. It's rolling with 46 and one kick, doing a trick. Check it. Oh, boy. it's a 1 and a 1 and a 3, but the last one, that fourth one that I got from BRB, that's the 6.
Let's go. Mark 2 style for each of you, gang.
Oh.
Team roll.
Oh.
Team roll.
Aw, team.
Maeve throws her hoverboard down and takes off. I think she's like, she's showing off a little bit here because on her one side, she's got Walton Wick, who she always wants to impress and make a good impression on because she thinks he's dreamy. And on the other side, she's got K-Jump, who she's mad at right now,
but
is also fiercely competitive with, so she really wants to, like, show K-Jump that she can do this. So, yeah, she is ducking underneath conveyor belts and doing kickflips over conveyor belts. She's grinding around the rim of that big vat of molten whatever that's pouring down. She's doing a grind off the lip of that.
Whoa.
Just having a real fun time in this very dangerous factory, taking longer than is needed. I think where the jacket comes into play is I'm going to use, you know, the classic hard light upscaling to augment with hard light ornamentation on my jacket. In this case, it's a big hard light arm that I'm using to carry Sharla through.
Nice.
The rest of us are all slug blasters, but Sharla does need to come with us here.
Yeah.
So I've just got one big beefy hard light arm that is picking up Sharla and moving her from point to point.
Brilliant. What's Walt doing?
I think Walt is going along, and he's really stepped up his hoverboarding game over the course of being with Gold Star Disaster, and he's trying to keep up. He's not maybe being as flashy as Maeve. It's hard to be as flashy as Maeve, one who shines so bright. But Walt is just like pulling as many little stunts and things as he can. But I think I mainly want to, like, along the way, he's going to find something useful on I'm kind of thinking of this as a combination of a gear item I usually have of something you found on your way here and, guys, you accidentally noticed stuff everyone else didn't. Hidden panels, perfect safe spots, looming monsters. I kind of want to just be like, oh, he finds something on a conveyor belt and he just kind of, like, manages to snag it and pick it up. I'm not going to say what yet.
Okay.
I don't know what.
Yeah, you get that. Absolutely. I think K-Jump and Tybalt really like snap to and are also like bringing their A game in navigating this factory. K-Jump is kind of pushing your buttons, Maeve, and Tybalt is kind of pushing your buttons, Walt, after what you pulled against him in Popularia. But you both notice that each of them, as much as they're kind of goading you a little bit, they are also focused on the larger goal of get to the other side safely. They're not doing anything to try and, like, seriously mess with you. Like, if one of you does a kickflip, one of them tries to do a slightly more impressive kickflip. That kind of vibe. But you can tell that they are sort of locked in to what you need to do here and that the success of this is the first priority. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Thank you.
You make it to the other side. You punch into nth gear, and you push through this thin zone. And I'm going to spend a bite. I want someone to roll 2d6.
One from me, one from you.
Oh, I was going to say the chill normally rolls with 2d6.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
A 6 and a 5.
For a total of 11.
Oh, no. There's adding now? Slug Blaster doesn't have math.
You break through the thin zone, and you expect more of the same with Lansden. You know, the temperature-controlled hallways, the matte, neutral color palettes, the
smell. I don't know. How would you describe the smell of inside of a room? But, like, it's apparent to you that, you know, the inside of Lansden has a smell, because that's not what you're smelling. You are smelling wildflowers. And you are seeing jewel tones and an undulating ribbon expanding out from you. And you realize Charla's calculations were slightly off. This is not a thin zone that you take from Upper Ablum to Upper Ablum. You are on a little detour in Empyrean.